Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. We're so glad you decided to join us again this evening, or if you're listening on a podcast, good job. Keep binge listening. We like those podcast listeners.
And we're glad and hope that everybody had a good July 4th.
Yes, of course. Lots of travel. Summer's here. We're enjoying the sunshine. And I'm excited about our guest tonight.
I am too, though I know very little about our guest.
I know a lot.
Just the few teasers that you gave me, I'm very excited by.
I have my Uncle Gary, also known as Gary Adams, here with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm gonna call you Uncle Gary too.
And it's nice that you warned me like 30 seconds before we did this too.
You shanghaied him.
So I kind of did, because I put this itinerary together probably what, a month ago or a couple weeks ago, and said, oh, Gary's gonna come with me to the radio and all that fun stuff, and just when we walk in the building, so you're gonna be on the radio.
You tricked him into coming to the Heritage Museum because of the Double Vision exhibit.
Well, also that was pretty cool exhibit to see, right? Because we're into cameras and photos and all those things. So,
and then suddenly, as you're enjoying the exhibit, you get told you're going to be on the radio.
And I sort of agreed, but I said, no state capitals, please, because I don't do so well with those.
Okay, Mac. And I did. I said, Mac's the one that likes to do the questions.
I do mediocre on the state capitals.
Right, but you
like. Once upon a time, I used to.
You like trivia, though.
I do love trivia.
Right.
Though I stink it. Like, I've done the bar trivia events, and I'm terrible at it.
Okay.
So
no state capitals for us.
We need more archaic pop culture questions and history questions for me. But the worst part is people think, oh, all history I'll know. And I make it very clear, especially here, I really love American history.
Right.
When we start talking ancient kings, I don't care. Right. I'm terrible.
You had to narrow your time limit.
Yes.
You had only because so many years.
Uncle Gary's going to have tons of great stuff.
Yep.
Well, let's get to your word of the day.
So our word of the day does not describe Uncle Gary. It's a fopdoodle.
A fopdoodle. Is it a noun?
It's a noun. So these are historic words that have kind of gone out of style and they're not used anymore. And then I quiz. This is the only quiz.
And I think a fopdoodle.
Fopdoodle.
I guess first, you can appear to be smarter than I am.
If you have any idea, it's a noun. Person, place, or thing.
A fopdoodle, I think that is somebody who is boring and is like a fish out of water.
Maybe half of that.
Ooh, all right.
No, any guess?
No idea.
No idea. An insignificant fool, a buffoon.
A buffoon. I like the word buffoon.
But I like this because I feel like this is one that I could bring into my kids' vocabulary.
Yes.
And they would use it. Stop being a fopdoodle. I can hear it over and over again, right? Fopdoodle. All right.
Okay. So, and then speaking of trivia, these are the things that happen tomorrow, July 8th. So as always, bar trivia or making friends.
Yeah.
All right. So 1693, New York City authorizes the first police uniforms in American colonies.
Oh, interesting.
Uniforms.
And what year was that?
1693.
16. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did not see any photographs because, of course, there are no photographs, right. But I kind of am dying to know what they look like. All right, 1776, the Liberty Bell tolls to announce the Declaration of Independence. And have we ever seen the Liberty Bell?
I have not.
I have, several times.
I'm underwhelmed by it. I don't know what I expected.
It's too bad because it's slightly defective. It has this crack on the side that, you know, you wish they could fix it and display it better. But
and ring it. Ring the bell.
Well, they did ring it, I think on like 1876 or something. They rang it one more time.
And isn't it smaller than you would imagine, or is it large?
See, I was picturing as a little kid and making we're going to all the colonial stuff vacations. I expected like Big Ben. I expected something huge, and it's not.
I couldn't describe it now, but it's not huge. You're right. Yeah. It's significant.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool. See, I'm glad I saw it. And we're feeling a little bit superior to you for having seen it, Alana. You have not. So we apparently love this country more than you do.
On the bucket list.
All right. 1777. Independent Vermont introduces a new constitution prohibiting slavery.
Good
Vermont.
Job.
Vermont.
Your favorite, one of your favorite states, or the favorite?
No.
One of the favorites.
Well, I'm an Oregonian now.
Okay. But still.
I have a fondness for Vermont. There's different tiers, and it's in the top tier.
Yes.
But there's a lot to like about Vermont.
Sure.
Especially the history of Vermont.
That's a good one, yep.
All right. 1889, Wall Street Journal begins publishing.
That's very important.
1889.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Albert, 1913. Albert Carlton Gibson. I can't read my own writing here. Gilbert, I'm sorry. Alfred Gilbert, 1913's patent for the Erector Set is issued. It becomes one of the most popular toys of all time. An Erector Set. Do kids even have them today?
Nope.
Do you even know what I'm talking about?
I do. I mean, you build things with it.
I had one and had a motor, and you could make all kinds of, you know, mechanical metal things and
oh my gosh.
Lots of screws and nuts and bolts. And
how old were you? 5.
Oh, probably. I mean, it would have been in that era, the first 10 years.
Like 5 to 10 is kind of my guess.
I like building models and things, so I always enjoyed models of different sorts. So that was, you know, something.
My brother had one, and I liked to play with it, but I wasn't allowed to.
Oh.
Because it has a lot of screws and other things in it. But he made a little elevator thing. It was kind of cool. It had a motor in it. So,
all right.
And suddenly I'm feeling very old sitting across from you, Alana. 1918, Ernest Hemingway is wounded on the Italian front. 1950, MacArthur is named Korean commander.
Okay.
1951, Paris celebrates its 2000th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
1951, Paris. It's old. Yeah. But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history. 1853, Commodore Perry sails into Tokyo Bay. And kind of ties in a little bit to a local story here.
Okay.
Ranald McDonald is born here, and then he gets himself cast away in Japan, and he's the first guy to teach all the people around the emperor how to speak English, so that when this happens, Commodore Perry in 1853, when he arrives, there's people that can speak English.
Oh, okay.
Prior to this, Japan was a closed society.
Oh, interesting.
So
okay.
All of a sudden, Commodore Perry shows up, can actually communicate with people, and then pretty soon it gets opened up.
Huh. Okay.
So the thing I think had the most impact. What'd I miss?
You missed a good one.
Uh-oh.
President Ronald Reagan nominated Sandra Day O'Connor to the Supreme Court Justice on this day. She was the first woman.
How'd that turn out?
She was the Arizona Court of Appeals judge to be the first woman justice in the U.S. in history. So she was unanimously approved for her appointment to the nation's highest court. And on September 25th, she was sworn in.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So my 6 degrees of separation. My first museum that I worked in was in Wichita, Kansas, Old Cowtown Museum. And I was there from 1995 through 98-ish. And we still had in all of our publicity that Sandra Day O'Connor had stopped by in like the late 80s. And there was a quotation of what she thought of the place.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Like 10 years removed and we're still claiming, oh, Sandra Day O'Connor recommends.
Stopped by. Yes. Well, 6 degrees. I went to Sandra Day O'Connor Elementary School when I lived in Phoenix or Mesa, one of those in Arizona. They love her there, of course. So, yeah. So moving on to our guests. Gary, visiting us from Washington, from Florida, and Omaha. And California. All the places.
Now, wait a minute. You live in all those places?
At some point.
Some point.
Okay.
Years in the making.
Yes. But originally from Omaha. So this is my dad's brother. So my dad has 2 brothers, 3 boys.
Omaha. You have one of the best zoos in the world.
Yes, it is. And I, you know, I'll have to say I haven't been to it because it became the best after I left. But one that we had when I was there was, not so nice. But...
And why they were able to raise tons of money and build a much nicer one.
Right, right.
But one of the reasons we brought you here was to talk about your history with radio and television. Pretty cool path and very different than my path in radio and television. But tell us which one you started with.
Well, in second grade, I knew what I wanted to do. And full disclosure, I was born in 1949, so you get an idea of my age. I wanted to be on television. I wanted to be a TV camera person. And I probably said man at the time, but I won't say that anymore. I loved television. I actually loved radio. And I just thought all that was like really, really neat. And that's what I wanted to do. So I had no problems, you know, figuring out what I wanted to do as I was moving forward in my life. I mean, there were times I wanted to be a train engineer and that sort of thing. But I understood that later. So basically, my start in radio started, and I will give full credit to the Junior Achievement Program. If anybody, I don't even know if they have that here or not, but they would in many of the cities. It's still an active program. It teaches companies, sponsor students to form companies. And in Omaha, there were two radio stations that actually, and a TV station that formed, that sponsored Junior Achievement and formed companies. So my first entry, I was in radio. I got on the radio station, and it happened to be the popular radio station in town, which was pretty neat because, you know, that's what everybody listened to as teenagers and things like that. And so we had a weekly radio show. They taught us how to, you know, work the equipment and do everything, and I fell in love. And there's a single person there that taught me the concept of how it's all connected together. It was no electronics involved, but I mean, it's like, you know, this is how it's all hooked together, how the audio console works, you know, was much different than the console you have in front of you.
A little smaller.
It had, you know, maybe bigger. Six knobs on it and some switches and stuff, but, and there would be two turntables, you know, sitting there because you would sit there and play one record and, you know, switch over to the next one. And this was the era of cart machines for spots and commercials and things like that. So it had what it looked like as an 8-track, but it wasn't an 8-track. It was really a 2-track. Well, it was a single track, continuous loop recording player, and the discs or the carts you'd just plug in there. So everyone would be a commercial, an announcement, a jingle, you know, any kind of thing that the radio stations would use, and they have a bunch of them there. The announcer would sit there and push buttons to start them, and they'd have a button to push and start the records, and I loved it. And so from that, I could literally, I mean, I just was one of these people, I could look at the equipment and sort of figure out how it works. I did that because even in grade school, I figured out tape recorders and film projectors and things like that. It's just really interesting, you know. This would have been in the 50s.
So two questions. How old are you when you're doing the radio show?
Well, right. So when we did Engineer Achievement, the, you know, as students, we were in high school. So this would have been junior and senior high school. So I'd been, you know, 14, 15,
16.
And yeah. What you talked about, two record players, so you're playing records. What kind of music are you playing?
Well, the station we were working at, or we were at the first time, was pop music. So it was rock, rock and roll, or whatever would have been 50s style music at the time. It was a blast. And we would record the show so it would air like on a Sunday night, and so we could be at home listening to it.
Nice.
And do you do everything at that? I mean, are you the DJ too?
Well, yeah. So that was the idea. So everybody got to, we mixed it all up. So we each got to announce, we each got to run the board.
Okay.
We just, you know, there were two of us that ran the board the most because we knew how to do it. You know, once we figured out how to do it, it was really easy. So a bunch of the students were, you know, I'll just do the talking because, you know, I'm not doing this, but I figured it out. You know, this was what I wanted, you know, what part of what I wanted to do. I mean, I was in broadcasting. I wanted to understand the whole thing. Spent a lot of time walking around behind the equipment, looking at the wiring and stuff, much different than what we had on our home stereos and things. But it was really great. So that was high school. Went to college, University of Nebraska. And went to electrical engineering is the course of study, and so that also guided me to what I did the rest of my life. But the very first thing that I did was I wanted to work in radio, and there was a local radio station, which was it was interesting because it was a mixed format. So during the day it would be middle of the road music and that sort of thing, and at night then they had a classical period for 2 hours, and then they had hard rock, what they call album-oriented rock, at late night. And then on the weekends, they had a couple of jazz hours and stuff like that. And they had a morning talk show that, it wasn't talk show, but they had a morning show that played light music and talk and stuff like that. It was, I really liked that format. To this very day, I think I would prefer a mixed radio station like that, because it's something you tune into, you listen to. You don't consider it necessarily a background.
Go music. KMUN.
I was going to say, it sounds like KMUN.
Yeah, our local public radio.
So back it up for just a second. You're in second grade and you decide this is what you want to do with your life. What do your parents do? And are they supportive, or are they just laughing like, next week you're going to want to be an astronaut?
Oh, no, absolutely. They were 100% supportive. I mean, this was crazy, but I wanted to buy a tape recorder when I was in like fourth or fifth grade. And it was a struggle, but they helped me buy a tape recorder, a used tape recorder, but I could record with a microphone. But then I also figured out how to wire a speaker output directly into the thing. And without electronics knowledge, that's not trivial. And to this very day, people do that sort of thing, and they don't understand how to do it correctly.
Hello, right here.
But so I recorded the radio station. And then, what I would do is I figured out how to hook a microphone in and make it play through the recorder so I could actually announce the songs and then play them and have them come out. And then I would run wires to speakers in the house. And literally, this is where the parents were really, really supportive. And this was by the time I was in junior high. They let me put wires all throughout the house in most all the rooms. I had, would be like a 10-conductor pair of wires running from my bedroom. And I made a console with literally 100 switches on it, so I could switch, sound to different speakers in different places. And I figured out how to make an intercom system using old telephone handsets. And so I wired bells. I mean, this is all just fooling around, but, I could push a button in my bedroom and a bell would ring in the kitchen and my mom would answer it, and hi mom, is it time for dinner yet?
Oh my god,
like the breakfast, the morning bathroom scene, and what's the backup ready, and who's available to get in there now?
So literally, you could listen to two different stereo systems. My personal one was in my bedroom. I could play records and tapes and things like that, and then we had a stick console stereo that I wired into. And so this is where the parents did allow me to break into the equipment and break into the walls of the house. My dad even helped me run some of the wires and stuff like that. So
Oh my god, yes,
amazing. Absolutely, they knew what I was going to do.
That's amazingly supportive. I love that.
So let's go back to college. So you're in college, you're at the radio station. What comes next?
So I worked at the radio station, and I enjoyed the concept of, I was an announcer. I wasn't a great announcer. I enjoyed it a lot, but I wasn't great at it. But I also enjoyed fixing equipment. And at the radio stations at that level, they couldn't afford, expensive announcers that they hired students, right? And engineers were difficult, but every radio station had to have one qualified, what they call first-class radio engineer. They had to pass the FCC test to get the license to be able to work on the transmitter. I didn't have that. I had the third-class one, and I wanted to make the first-class one. But at the time, I did want to work on equipment, and I did figure it out. And radio station, the manager said, well, if you know how to fix this stuff, we could sure use your help sometime, because then they had other people they could call if something broke. So I could start working on the equipment and repairing things if something didn't work. It probably wasn't that difficult, but like the potentiometer on the console would get scrapey, and I figured out how to open it up and, clean it and make it work and, replace the needle on the turntable and stuff like that. We're still playing records now, no digital, no computers, no MP3s or 4s.
But wear and tear on everything too.
Yeah. But it was a fun radio station to work at. It was really, really funky inside. And we had a very famous, the RCA diamond condenser microphone that you see is a huge thing. That was one of our microphones that we used. And in fact, I have a picture of myself sitting in front of that microphone, running the show. And I really enjoyed it. And I could talk forever, but
that's good. But you decide, so after you do start to move up and away pretty quickly here.
So the real thing was that I did want to work in television, but the second radio station I worked for in Lincoln had a couple of other engineers, and they were students. And it turns out Two of them were students in some of my classes, so we were all the same age. They had the license. And it also turned out that both those gentlemen worked at the TV station in the summer relief program. And it also turns out that one of them was the son of the chief engineer at the TV station. And they said, Gary, you need to work at the TV station and get on the vacation relief. It's a great program. You work for 3 months, you get the same rate that the engineers get, and you guaranteed if they like you, you come back every year and you get the same job and you get to do everything. And they took me to the TV station and they showed me. This is far better than radio at the time. You know, we had giant pieces of equipment that you don't see in TV stations anymore. The cameras and the, you know, we had videotape machines and film projectors and big, you know, switching equipment and giant monitors and stuff like that. And I said, oh yeah, I'd love to do this. How do I do this? I said, well, first you have to get your first class license. And I had actually tried to get it before. So here's the, you know, try to keep it short. You know, I don't do tests well. I just don't. I can prove that for the rest of my life. Partially my memory. I have to really learn things and become intimate with them. And then I have no problem understanding it. So like I can understand electronics really well. You know, you can't tell me about, you know, digital, analog, anything like that. I totally understand it. But if I had to sit down and write up something to make something, you know, happen, I probably couldn't do it. It's just, you know, putting it together. So I struggled with the test. And finally, on the third time, these two gentlemen, actually there were three all together that were on the program that I knew, they said they helped me with, you know, learning the tests and everything like that. And it was one last ditch effort before they had to make a decision for hiring a new, you know, vacation relief. And so I had to go to Kansas City to take the test. And I actually went down there with your mom, Alana, because your grandmother was lived near in Topeka, I think.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. So I went down, I stayed with them, and I drove into Kansas City, and I took the test, and there was two tests you had to pass. The second class was the hardest one. First class was a lot easier, but I passed the second class, and I just about collapsed. And the guy was so nice, the tester. He said, so you ready for the first? I said, in a minute. He says, sure, go ahead, take a break, you know, come back. And I went, took the first, and I made it, and I passed, and I was just like so relieved. I couldn't believe it. I literally found a phone booth and called my coworker, the son of the chief engineer. I said, I passed the test. He said, great. He says, I want you to come in here, and then you talk to them and interview more or less for the job. Anyway, long story short, I got the job in vacation relief, and it was like great. It was unbelievable. We got to operate every piece of equipment in the place. We learned how to run videotape machines, cameras. We also had to repair it. So we also had to learn how to repair things. There were good engineers there, excuse me, that
we got good sound here.
Lightning and thunder that helped you know, show where things are and stuff like that. And I did the same thing at the TV station there that I did anywhere else by looking at things and where things are. I figured out how it was all wired because there was no schematic of the TV station. There were lots of notes and diagrams and things like that, but there was no one diagram that showed you how everything was connected. And by the time I left, I actually had drawn a complete diagram of all the wiring.
I mean, this is the day too when the wires are below the floor, yeah. Right? And it's like 2 feet thick or a foot.
It could be, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Wires and wires and wires.
So at this point in your life, which one were you liking more, TV or radio?
Well, I love television. Honestly, the thing that's really nice about radio is that you can do it by yourself, at least in those days. You could do it by yourself, the whole thing. It was a lot of fun. And television requires a lot of people. It then required a lot of people to get the job done. Now there are people such as you doing television, you know, by yourself because of all the technology that we have right. To be able to do that. But in those days, you know, it required, you know, camera people and sound people. And we had to have people stationed at the transmitter to keep the transmitter running 24 hours a day.
Right.
So yeah. All these things were necessary. I mean, all the equipment, half the equipment was vacuum tubes and things like that. So
where all did your career take you after there?
In 4 minutes. I think you should jump ahead because, I mean, he's kind of the Yes, so, go right. ahead.
So okay. the television station bought a cartridge videotape machine. Now this is kind of like the audio cart machines I was talking about before. They were they aren't continuous loop, but it was a 2-inch wide tape and a cartridge. I'm gyrating here, and of course everybody can see that. It was made by RCA. They installed the machine, and by the time the installer came out from RCA to put it in, we'd already had it running. Because I, again, figured out the manuals and how it sort of worked and everything. And he and I became sort of good friends, and I said, this is the job I want. I want to be able to go around and install machines like this and work at, you know, TV stations, work on equipment. And he said, well, whatever you do, don't apply right away, because RCA won't hire anybody after they just sell them a major piece of equipment. They won't take away somebody from a from a customer.
Because right. they want it to work.
He said, wait a year or two. Well, actually, the person I worked for, the chief engineer, knew I was sort of interested in doing something like that. He said, well, we would like you to, you know, we'll train you on the machine, but we'd like you to hang around for a while. So I stayed two more years. And then I applied to RCA. Another long story we won't go into, but I ended up going to work for RCA. The service company was in Chicago, and all I did was travel all around North America, a little bit of South America, installing machines and repairing videotape machines for 3 years.
Okay, that just makes me want to ask a million different questions.
Well, it gets better. Keep going.
But my ultimate goal was to do the big time, right?
Yeah.
And big time either meant New York or Los Angeles. And so in my travels, of course, you meet places and people and stuff like that, and people offer you jobs. So literally in LA, a good friend of mine said, Gary, I want you to come out here and work in post-production. So they hired me at a post-production facility. This is where all the TV shows were made. They'd be recorded in sound stages and stuff, and then they would be edited and post-produced, put together. So I was ultimately the chief engineer of a major post-production facility in Los Angeles for a bunch of years. It gets crazier, but I ended up after a while going back to RCA for a short period of time being a consultant. And then I designed and built a television station in Salinas, California from scratch. A good friend of mine that I'd met traveling with RCA said, well, we're going to build a new TV station. Want you to help us with that. I designed every wire in it, and we put it together and built that in 1984.
And I remember visiting that TV station later. It wouldn't have been 84, but years later, because you weren't even working there anymore.
Right.
And then went to work in television eventually.
Now, were you inspired by that visit?
Or did you already know? I don't know. But keep going, because your time is going to run out. I know.
So doing that, though, I actually started working with a person that I worked with at the post-production facility. He started his own company, and he made some custom products for the film industry. And so for another 10 years, then I actually worked on a product that synchronized the film to tape transfer process and was literally used in the late 80s to most of the 90s for most every film, television, and motion picture for doing dailies.
Every one of them.
Just about every
one of them.
Yes.
This is amazing. And we're going to go into overtime on this one. So we may play a clip of this next week.
Okay. Let's keep going.
We've never done this before.
We've never done this.
But go ahead and make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.